all in all, because all is related to everything else, and everything is part of the all. A weekly space on Oneness Talk Radio to explore topics of interest for our whole being, holism, health and well-being, philosophical questions and ideas for our times, and much more. All in All with Silvana Spano, therapist, holistic health coach, healer, and teacher. Hi everyone, I hope you've been well. Before I get into today's episode, I wanted to say that as of this month, November 2019, All in All and Todo en Todo will be updated monthly instead of weekly. This is because Patrick and I have gotten so busy in our local and international global wellness solution practice lately that I had to rearrange some things in my schedule to make it all happen. Now, before I move on, I also would like to remind you that there are many ways of accessing these radio shows, including a new YouTube channel for All in All and Todo en Todo, as well as podcast platforms such as Spotify, Breaker, Radio Public, and Google Podcasts that now carry our show. If you want the links, send me an email message and I will forward them all to you, so you can still access them on demand whenever it's convenient for you if you miss them on Oneness Talk Radio. So, what is the subject for today? It's the pros and cons that I see in my two cultures, especially in the areas of health, healing, and more. In other words, it's about my firsthand experience, my personal observations when it comes to function and dysfunction in the two cultural worlds that I live in. And as I was saying, I am particularly interested in how these differences apply to the areas of health and well-being. What prompted this episode was a series of experiences that I've had lately here on the ground in Ecuador that have expanded my clarity about some core aspects that either enhance or deter my clients from achieving their health goals. As you know, I work in English and Spanish, so that some of my clients are local Ecuadorians and some are international people who are residents of Ecuador. English-speaking immigrants to Ecuador for the most part, although I've also had clients whose first languages are French, German, Italian, etc. First of all, and before I get more deeply into the subject, I'd like to qualify my perspective as not portraying any black and white reality, because absolute realities rarely exist, and this is especially true when it comes to culture and human perspective. So keep in mind that they are simply observations that I have made about tendencies that I encounter in groups of people. And occasionally, I also encounter exceptions, as you will see in my examples today. And what qualifies me, I suppose, to make these comments is that I am a live-in member of both cultures and have been for a long time, and that I work with people in a role that requires me to pay attention to cultural dynamics. So, among the many aspects of culture, with its visible and its invisible parts, we invariably find an aspect of human life that is always mediated by culture, which applies to issues of health and healing. We can define this as a set of beliefs, attitudes, structures, techniques, methodologies, and interpersonal relationships that are involved in diagnosing disease and intended to restore health and well-being. This is what I'm going to focus on today, for my examples about differences that I see and also as an area or an aspect of life that reflects the bigger cultural beliefs, philosophies, and ways of being of a social or cultural group. In other words, I'll be using the examples related to health and healing as a microcosm of a cultural macrocosm. Now, one big qualifier in this episode is my own position when trying to strike a balance between being culturally sensitive and being attuned with human rights. This is no small matter, and the truth is that sometimes when you try to be supportive of one, you step right on the toes of the other one. So let's talk about the line between cultural sensitivity and human rights, because this is where it gets really tricky for me as a person and as a counselor sometimes. To me, cultural preferences are good as long as they don't hurt anyone. There are definitely gray areas, but I'm talking about cases where there's obvious physical or emotional harm to oneself or to someone else, even if that harm is backed up by culture. Is it straightforward? No, it isn't. And I often have to get to know the person, the situation, the context, before I can even form an opinion about what is going on. But most of the time, it becomes clear, at least eventually. People come to me with concerns about their mental, emotional, and physical health, and they want my perspective on the matter. So my opinions are based on observations of dynamics that may be personal, but they are still always culturally mediated. Alfred Adler, the father of the school of psychology that I went to, used to say that personal problems are always invariably social problems. In fact, social and cultural issues apply to relationships, such as marriages, relationships among family members, like parents and children, and also to people's relationships with themselves. Because culture informs us about priorities, about what's more important, what matters most, what comes first, what conflicts with what. And this is true consciously or unconsciously, but mostly unconsciously. So one main aspect of culture, of any culture, is to keep people in check for the purpose of keeping social stability. By teaching people directly or indirectly how to behave in that particular context, the culture increases the predictability of people's behavior and thus the stability of human life. The problem is that in order to do that, every culture ignores or even oppresses the individual needs of its members. There's degrees of how much this is done and how it's done, but it's invariably done. And it's actually super useful for us to know and understand how this works in our own culture as part of our healing process, as part of our journey towards liberation from conditioning and from the traumas of conditioning that come from living in practically any human society. So the effects of that cultural control is the degree of empowerment or disempowerment that people end up living with as a consequence. And that's because in order to function in a culture, we are going to be making some compromises that sacrifice a part of ourselves in a way. There are many ways in which people make themselves small to survive, in quotation marks. This is, of course, an attempt to not rock the boat. in order to be accepted, to be loved. The problem is that when we do that, we victimize ourselves in the process. In other words, the culture sets the rules, but regular people become the enforcers, the culture police, to ourselves and to each other. So keep these concepts in mind as we move along here, and let's get more concrete. Let's see. I made a list about some aspects of the non-material culture of what I'm going to call the North and the South, with North and South being arbitrary terms to give them a name, although I recognize they're very simplistic, but you know what I mean. I mean modern versus more traditional, more Anglo-Saxon cultural influence versus more Latin influence, more industrialized versus less industrialized, etc. So here I go with the first item I have on my list. I would like to point out that North American non-material culture is very individualistic, meaning that independence and self-sufficiency, for example, are highly valued. Because of this, some foreigners with a more northern culture who are living here in Latin America are often seen as demanding in this culture. And sometimes they are. I've seen that too. There's a tendency in some circles of North Americans, for instance, to act superior and entitled. And that's not flattering. But the truth is that we, and I include myself, can often be seen as demanding only because we are exercising our right to be well informed in matters of, for example, our own health. Now, let's be clear that cultural northerners, in quotation marks, vary widely in terms of their attitudes towards health professionals and towards involvement with their own health. They vary generationally, by political alignment, and by personal philosophy. So no absolutes here at all. But in any case, this is a big deal for all of us because there are few areas of life, if any, that have more impact on personal sovereignty and self-determination than the area of health. So what I'm trying to say here is that in this regard, and at least for some people with the northern cultural mindset, I see a bit more maturity, more sense of responsibility when it comes to being involved in their own health. Now, when we look at the more collectivistic Latin American culture in this respect, we see a different pattern. For example, not asking too many questions is seen as respectful or trusting of authority. It's also seen as not being neurotic or too high maintenance. And that's encouraged in Latin American culture, including or perhaps especially when it comes to health and well-being. The problem is that with that submissive attitude, people often put themselves at risk. By abdicating their need to know what is going on with them and participating in the decision-making, they entrust their well-being to those who may not be making the best choices for them. So even though I'm Latin American in some ways, I'm so not in that way and don't recommend that anybody do that. In fact, I say do get involved in your own health. It really pays off. The second item has to do with respecting authority, which in northern culture is valued, but it seems to be expressed more towards the law and the rules of the land than towards the social structure. While in Latin or southern culture, as we've been calling it, respecting authority is also up there in the collective mind, but is expressed more towards the social structure than towards the law. This is because the law is seen by many as arbitrary rules, which are fair and ethical sometimes, and they are unfair and unethical other times. But the same goes for the social structures that we've inherited. So the trick is in deciding case by case. Instead of having a preconceived approach, we need to decide in each instance whether the authority deserves our trust or not. And this is so important when it comes to our health, of course. Another comparison that I like to make is that in the Northern culture, the fear of breaking the rules often comes from the fear of economic consequences. While in the Southern culture, at least for the average person, the fear of breaking the rules most often comes from the fear of interpersonal consequences. Now, think about how these different aspects of culture can impact someone's disposition for making changes related to health and well-being. In terms of being a self-starter, staying motivated and on track, and not giving up because someone else thinks you're being unusual or even weird by, say, eating differently or setting boundaries. Okay, another comparison. So the Northern culture is focused on individual achievement quite a bit, while the Southern culture is much more focused on family, friendship, and in fact, there's an aspect of Latin culture known as familism or familismo in Spanish, which is a term used in sociology and cultural studies. So familismo, which is the idea of family unit and support, is a protective element, and it's great in some ways as a source of identity and strength and pride, but it's important to understand that it also means that the needs of the family are often, if not always, put over the individual's needs, and decisions are made as a family unit, which again can sometimes go against the individual's needs and even rights when it comes to health and well-being. Okay, a couple more, and these are all related and they overlap each other, of course. So now both cultures have their version of don't rock the boat. The Northern version of it is that you are directly or subtly but surely told that there are consequences for doing this or that that you may not like. The Southern culture, being less direct, tends to manipulate by putting people in their place, in quotation marks, and this is usually done based on social hierarchy, which is very real. And so that happens in personal relationships, work relationships, class relationships, and more. Manipulation tactics, when someone is considered difficult or even insolent in certain cultural contexts, are ignoring, minimizing, invalidating, and ridiculing. Here's one last comparison to balance out the scale. And it is that there's something to be said about the Southern culture's level of complexity and flexibility. In Latin America, this is perhaps because the heritage blends indigenous, European, African, and Asian peoples, plus different languages and cultural traditions. So there's no one unified Latin American culture. Rather, it is all these things. This makes for a multi-layered and complex cultural context that is not easy to navigate, especially from the outside. So my recommendation is that if you need to evaluate a situation but you were not born into the culture, that you don't jump to conclusions and instead take the time to understand what is going on, because it may not be simple or obvious. I see this mistake way too often, where foreigners living in Ecuador think they understand what's going on, but they don't, because the level of complexity they encounter is beyond their own points of reference. In terms of how this applies to issues of health and well-being, be aware that the Southern, and in this case the Latin, culture is much more nuanced, but also more flexible. Because Latin Americans are more interested in people than they are in laws and in rules, you can actually find those who are willing to go out of their way to accommodate your needs. And this includes professionals in the health and medical field, but you have to ask in the right way. By being friendly but humble, you can accomplish a lot and even find people who will treat you like family if you come across as someone they feel that they want to support. So now, let me tell you how these differences have manifested lately in my clients and how I've been involved in this process of trying to help them sort this out. Let me give you two examples to illustrate some of the points I made earlier. So I have one Ecuadorian client who has been seeing me for counseling, but had been seeing another health practitioner for her physical health. To make a long story short, while we had been working on issues of assertiveness, self-determination, and trusting her own needs, the other practitioner acted in a very top-down, hierarchical manner with my client, which prompted the young woman to have to set limits. Unfortunately, the other practitioner saw her as a difficult client and called me behind the client's back to discuss her case. So against the cultural grain, I stood up for my client, whose core issues are actually the trespassing of her rights by figures of authority all her life. The other example has to do with a foreign resident of Ecuador who recently had surgery here in Cuenca. I advocated for her with all the doctors involved to make sure they respected her needs. It took some work because our requests were unusual for here, but seriously, we made friends for life. Now, it's true that our coaching model, which has personal sovereignty and self-involvement as some of its main values, is more fitting for the individualistic nature of the Northern culture. This is not 100% or black and white or anything like that, but the truth is that Latin clients often run into issues such as, I can't tell my relatives that I eat differently. I can't refuse their foods. And this is a challenge, no doubt. Particularly in a culture that doesn't value everyone doing their own thing, lifestyle changes are often not supportive by the environment. And sometimes, no matter how much I talk about how basic of a human right it is to decide what we put in our mouth with every bite of food that we ingest, there is no change until the family members get involved, understand the reasons behind the changes, and support the process. Unfortunately, this doesn't happen very often. The thing is that whether in North America, Europe, Latin America, or anywhere in the world, breaking the norms is always a risk. However, there is a much bigger risk, in my view. So if you struggle with this, and we all do at one level or another, and especially if you have a tendency to stick with the social and cultural norms, keep in mind one of Krishnamurti's most famous and powerful quotes. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. Powerful, isn't it? And it applies to so many areas of our lives. So, what is the takeaway for all of us here? For me, it's about the line between fundamental human protections and cultural relativism. By paying attention to the difference between our human needs and our culturally influenced customs, we get closer to the natural self. And we can then try to see if there's a way of reconciling them, or, and this is a tough one, if one needs to be chosen over the other. I find that a lot of the work I do with my clients is actually this type of sorting out. Sorting out the influences of family, of life experiences, of culture from the reality of what they really need to be truly healthy at a deeper level or at a higher level that includes the level of the soul. To be fair, cultural norms tend to be a combination of principles that come from what's known as natural law, that's universal principles based on human rights that are recognized as natural and fair ways of interacting, respecting each other, and more, which we will talk about in another episode, and precepts that are solely designed to benefit the interests of the dominant members of the group. So the focus is often on maintaining conformity, because if you don't have conformity, you don't have stability. And without stability, you don't have good control over any population. So often the cultural norms are made into mores, which are perceived as being moral principles. But are they? Often they are not, but they are made into that so that they won't be questioned. So let's use a little example. Say that questioning your doctor is made to feel like lack of respect. What will that do? Well, it will discourage people from asking questions about their own health, not to feel like they're being a bad person. But there are always some people who see through it all, and instead of conforming, they come to change the culture with their thinking and their actions, a little bit at a time. Those people are called cultural creatives. Are you a cultural creative? Any of us can be a cultural creative. And we can do it with small steps. We can do it by breaking any custom that violates human rights, including the rights to physical and emotional integrity, liberty and security of the person, self-determination, freedom of thought, of conscience, of expression, just to name a few. And we can do this with little acts of courage. We can do it by helping a friend, a coworker, a neighbor, or in my case, a client, understand their human rights and support them in living with dignity without having to compromise or sacrifice their human rights, if at all possible. Have a good month ahead, and I will come back with another episode in December. Many blessings. And until next time. Thank you for listening to today's program. I wish you a week ahead filled with blessings for your body, heart, and soul. And hope that you tune into All in All next time. If you're bilingual or learning Spanish, I invite you to stay on and listen to the Spanish version of this episode. Coming up next, ciao!